Almost halfway through this first month of a very critical midterm election year. Still uncensored, unafraid, and unstoppable, the 14th of January, 2022. Welcome to the Stu Peters Show. My name is Stu Peters. Earlier this week, Chairman Biden gave a speech endorsing the abolition of the filibuster in the name of voting rights. In other words, he wants Democrats to radically rewrite the election laws for the entire country, and the only way that they have any hope of doing that is by getting rid of the filibuster. The Freedom to Vote Act would require that all states offer unlimited mail-in voting for any reason. It would require states to let people register online and on the same day as the election. It would create criminal penalties for spreading misinformation or disinformation about elections. By the way, they're already using our existing laws to prosecute someone for posting anti-Hillary Clinton memes in 2016. You can imagine what they'll do with an even more powerful law. But even while this law criminalizes political speech, it will also mandate that all felons nationwide be given the right to vote. That's one law that Democrats really want to pass. The other, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, would require most red states, but almost no blue states, to get permission from the federal government, that is, far-left bureaucrats, before being allowed to implement voter ID or change any other election policies and rules. But there's another idea going around, one that might distract Democrats enough to not pass their massive election grab bag. In the final days of the 2020 election, America's entire political future suddenly revolved around an obscure law called the Electoral Count Act, or the ECA. That law dates to 1887 and governs the exact process for tallying up electoral votes after an election. The ECA is supposed to dictate what states must do to have their electoral votes either accepted by Congress or rejected, and define on what grounds Congress could object to a state's electoral slate. It's also supposed to define what the role of the vice president is during the electoral tally. Unfortunately, this law isn't the clearest piece of legislation ever written, which is exactly why there was a huge fight over what Mike Pence and other Republicans could do during the vote tally last year. Now, this law could matter just as much in 2024 as it did in 2020, and it's entirely possible that Democrats will completely change their interpretation of the law in order to hold on to power. Imagine that. Last October, The Atlantic magazine wrote an article titled, "Kamala Harris May Have to Stop the Steal." In the article, the author wildly speculates that Harris, as vice president, would have the power to reject pro-Trump electoral slates in order to make sure that Joe Biden or even Harris herself wins the presidency. So there's recently been a lot of chatter from both parties about whether the Electoral Count Act should be changed. Normally, both parties wanting to pass the same law would be a huge red flag, a very bad sign. However, the people most opposed to changing the law are far-left Democrats. They say that changing the ECA is a trick to distract them from their own far more radical changes to the law. And honestly, we here at the Stu Peters Show aren't entirely sure what to think about all of this. Should the law be changed or should it be kept in place? America First Congressman Paul Gosar of Arizona has thought a lot more about this than we have, though, so hopefully he'll have some answers for us, and he joins us now. Congressman, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Stu.
So a little reported fact surrounding this push to reform the ECA, the Electoral Count Act, the archaic law governing the count of electoral votes in Congress, is that South Dakota's John Thune, who tried, by the way, to give the country red flag gun laws in 2019, and his good pal Mitch McConnell are the culprits responsible for opening the door to eviscerating the federalism inherent in the nation's only nationwide federal election. Now, of course, this is a proposal the Democrats want, and true to their lying serpent form, the establishment Republicans kicked off the issue to give the communist totalitarians cover in getting this accomplished. So this, of course, comes as Mike Pence, assisted by The Atlantic, attempts to make his political comeback after so totally botching January 6th. But Dr. Gosar, these totalitarian communist Democrats in the U.S. House are working with the likes of McConnell and the Senate to change the laws as they existed back on 21. So would you say that it's fair to say that by trying to change the ECA, that they're admitting, and not just quietly, but overtly admitting, that the Constitution and the very federalism inherent in the constitutional and statutory construction of the federal nationwide election in 50 states allows for disenfranchised states to object to fraud perpetuated on the process by rogue actors in states like Pennsylvania and Georgia and Arizona and Michigan.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the checks and balances. This is the difference between a republic and a democratic means of governance. There's checks and balances. This is one of the aspects in which the states, the smaller states, everybody is empowered to look over their elections. It's not the federal government who adjudicates the elections, it's the states. And what was the means of looking at when you have controversy like we had in Arizona, where we definitely had fraud from a number of different prospects. And we had a no way of doing a forensic audit. We didn't have a forensic audit that had been done at this point at that enumeration at this time. So it gave us an opportunity to look and take a chill pill. So basically what it did is it requires us to have one member from the House and one member from the Senate, that if they rise into declaratory concurrence, you have to have the debate about that state's jurisdiction, or are they fair? And what I rose to ask wasn't to just stop it, but was to delay, give states 10 days to do a reevaluation of the election because there were so many different problems associated with it.
So if Mitch McConnell is openly pushing this, is it fair to assume that his pal Kevin McCarthy is working together with him on this?
I don't think so. I don't really think so at that, Stu. You know, I think there's a lot of people can hit Kevin McCarthy over the head with, and same with me. But you look at recently what Kevin has done. He stood up behind me, as well as Lauren Boebert and others, and he's really taken the fight to the Democrats. You know, once again, you've also seen Lindsey Graham take a challenge to Mitch McConnell as well. I said this over and over again. We have to have people that are willing to stand and fight based on the principles of the republic and the way it was founded, not go back to the means of being an ordinary democracy where you don't have a checks and balances to make sure that everybody's vote counts appropriately and that some bureaucrat is not over and egregiously changing that. That's a key here. And so their senators even questioning Mitch McConnell's ability. I mean, Lindsey Graham made the point. He said, listen, I am not voting for a majority leader in the Senate when we take back the Senate, unless they can work clearly with a candidate that has reformed. That is Donald Trump. So you better get used to it. If you're not going to work with Trump, I'm not voting for you. And I think a lot of people are starting to get on that bandwagon.
Steve Bannon often talks about this 100 seats. We're going to win 100 seats. We're going to have this super majority. You know, Kevin McCarthy is cruising to what should be a 50 or 75 seat swing in the House. But by all accounts, it looks as if, just like in 2018, Kevin is more interested in keeping a thin majority. Do you agree with that?
I don't know. I think it benefits him to have more, because then people like me and our group, the Freedom Caucus, don't have as much influence. When you want to be speaker, you got to get 218. And so if we hold 50 of those seats as the Freedom Caucus, you got to have all the Freedom Caucus get online. Otherwise, you can't be speaker. So you have to go back and look at historical aspects. So I do think it's harder to govern when you have a huge majority. But what we ought to also do is define it. You know, people are talking about having a contract with America. That's fine, but it can't come down from Washington down. It's got to come from the people up. Like, I've been dialoguing with a gentleman here that's got very personal adaptations to reforming Section 230. Those are some of the reforms on freedom of speech that we need to do. But we as the public need to hold Congress to say, when are you going to do it? When are you going to introduce it by? When are you going to debate it? And when are you going to have it done by? That holding people accountable to that timeline.
I want to stay on this because you mentioned the Freedom Caucus and leading the House. Is Kevin McCarthy the man who should be leading the House going into the next Congress?
I think that's an ongoing discussion, Stu, in regards to what has he done. Lately, when they egregiously tried to remove me from Congress, and they continue to do that, not only voices like mine, but Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lord Boebert, Matt Gaetz, and others, he stood strong, and he actually had all the rest of the Republicans stand behind us. That was a unifying message, not a defying, breaking down message. And I don't count Ms. Cheney and Mr. Kinzinger as Republicans, because they're not. They're colluding with the enemy.
Well, I'm a huge fan of yours, and I just want you to know that, and I know that you can't say this, but I can, and you got some big balls, Dr. Gosar, and for standing up for this country and for being an America First, a true fighter, and taking these senseless hits from the radical left, and, you know, being taken off of your committee assignments for a stupid and entertaining, what I thought was a great anime video. And I don't know what happened to the America First Caucus, but I hope that that's really being considered, because it seems to me that the Freedom Caucus could use some help. For all of 17 and 18, we didn't get a lot of action from those at the top of the Freedom Caucus, including Jim Jordan, who hasn't responded to repeated requests to join this show. And to me, from this microphone looking in, it would appear that Kevin McCarthy's managed to get his tentacles around some of the key elements inside of the Freedom Caucus. Because here on this program, we're determined to get to the truth of the matter. And so we have to ask, like, you know, the House Freedom Caucus is supposed to be a staunch opponent to the RNC and totally cucked GOP establishment in the U.S. House. And I'm just not seeing that opposition.
Well, I think we can't do the biggest key is we can't do business as usual anymore. You know, we're $30 trillion in debt. We're losing our republic. We're losing our autonomy and freedoms and liberties. So we have to look at every bill, every single bill, and what does it do to espouse liberties and freedoms and empower American citizens to have those that the freedoms that they enjoy, and to empower them to be solutions, not part of the liability onto this country. So we have to look at that from a creative aspect. How do we put that in order? Yeah, one of the things that we wanted to do was to take down the National Defense Authorization Act. Imagine that. Having a discussion about the erroneous and troubling withdrawal, a retreat out of Afghanistan. Wouldn't that have been nice to find out the industrial complex of all these big corporations that are making trillions of dollars off the American taxpayer? And how about the generals making millions upon millions of dollars on what they call the industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about the military? Have a come to Jesus moment in regards to the American public, put light on those. And then have a discussion. There are certain things that I got to tell you that the Democrats are better suited than we are with reforms. I'll talk about, you know, breaking up the insurance monopolies. That's something I've worked with them very greatly. But what we've lost is the whole perspective of having dialogue. If somebody disagrees with me, maybe there's a reason why they disagree with me. Maybe we ought to air that out. Maybe we ought to hear what that perspective is instead of trying to take them off their committees. But once again, for me, it's liberating. I have to look at what I can do. So I can't control what they do to me, but what I have to look at is a creative format. What they did by taking me off the committee is they gave me every committee. Now they have to deal with me on every committee. So it's liberating. You know, we're not a one-trick pony. We don't just do things in regards to energy and power. But guess what? We can start utilizing the 10th Amendment to empower taking back what we, the people in the states, gave the federal government. That's a nice checks and balances. Imagine that, federalism for a change, that we can start working together in this huge bureaucracy, this bubble called Washington, D.C., making people that represent us come to represent us truly and answer to us. What hurts? How can I help? And how can we get this done? So I think this is an opportunity. And we've got now 6, 7 months, 8 months to get it done right and put the onus on the Republican leadership to get it done and get it done right.
Yeah, and we're going to continue to hold Republican leadership equally accountable. We know what we're getting with these communists. They would kick you out of Congress altogether if they could. I know they're calling you a white nationalist for talking about diversity.
Here's the deal, Stu. Those that scream it's the loudest better look in the mirror, because the enemy is them.
That's right.
So if they're calling me the white nationalist, go back and look in the mirror. Those people that are calling it are the ones that are guilty. If you smell the stain, it's up to you.
That's biblical.
So, you know, the big deal this here is don't let them define you. They're not going to define me. We're going to work on behalf of the American people creatively and empower them, not make them victims. This is a golden opportunity to get this country back. And think of how they've tried to demoralize, destroy, you know, the liberties and freedoms, the inflation, the energy, everything that Donald Trump built, they destroyed. And the American public is going, wait a minute, what's going on here? So this is a golden opportunity to put it to them. But it's also the opportunity to revamp and make sure the people that we elect are held accountable in that majority.
And we're going to talk a whole lot about that revamp. Absolutely. And the way that it gets done. when we have you back. We're out of time. Congressman Dr. Paul Gosar, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it. And thank you for your fight. I really, really mean that. We need you. And we're glad that you're rogue and off the committees and you're a fly in the soup of all of these communists trying to run roughshod over this country. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, appreciate you.
All right. Always a pleasure talking to Congressman Paul Gosar. Dr. Gosar, a true America First patriot. If you want to find out who the real patriots are, just look for who's the most persecuted. That guy constantly under attack. We're lucky to have him. Coming up on the Stu Peters Show, Karen Kingston, a biotech analyst, is going to be here. She has the damning proof about Fauci's fatal funnel. This stuff just keeps on coming out. Plus, Steve Kirsch says that upward 400,000 Americans could be dead from these bioweapon shots. I know that you won't mind me taking a minute to talk to you about Guns, our newest sponsor here on the show. GunsAmerica.com, the most trusted online platform for buying and selling guns, whether you are a private party or if you are a dealer. For crying out loud, get a gun. They've already told you we can just stop allowing them to purchase guns if we just declare a public health emergency. Take a look around. Get guns. If you have guns, get more guns. If you don't have a gun, for God's sake, please arm yourself. Handguns, shotguns, rifles. GunsAmerica.com, 25 years in business, the most trusted online platform, plus experts breaking down, reviewing these firearms, telling you what's good, what's bad, plus Hunt 365. If you're a hunting enthusiast, you want to hunt 365 days a year, there is a place for you to hunt. It's all broken down at GunsAmerica.com. Join 1.5 million really smart people. Go become a member. I'm a member. I'll see you there. GunsAmerica.com. Make sure that you mention Stu Peters when you go to GunsAmerica.com. Well, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down Joe Biden's nationwide vaccine mandate yesterday, 6-3. And that's good news for people who've been holding out, of course. But for millions of Americans, it's already too late. They were already forced to submit to this jab to save their jobs. And for an unknown number of people, the shot that they were forced to take also took their life. How many Americans have died thanks to these COVID shots? Steve Kirsch thinks that he knows or has an estimate. He's recently calculated that there have been over 150,000 excess deaths in the past year, and that 292,000 of these deaths could have been caused by these shots. How exactly did he reach that conclusion? We'll ask him in a minute. Kirsch is a former Silicon Valley high-tech executive. When the pandemic started, he created the COVID-19 Early Treatment Fund to fund researchers working on repurposed drugs, including fluvoxamine, which reduces death from COVID by a factor of 12. After he discovered his friends were injured by the COVID vaccines, he started the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation. He also writes a very popular COVID-19 newsletter on Substack, and he joins us now. Steve, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Great to be here, Stu. I'm a big fan of your show.
Well, thank you. So this is staggering numbers. We've always suspected that what's being reported is grossly underreported. How did you arrive at these conclusions?
Well, I basically used the government database, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. It was created in the 80s, and it's the one system that the government relies on. So I used the government database. I used the methodology that is approved by the CDC for determining the exact number of deaths, because the VAERS system is underreported. So for every 41 events that happens, you'll only get about one VAERS report. I mean, like, I know some doctors that had to report like 2,000 VAERS reports. They only reported two. So that would be an underreporting factor of 1,000. Other doctors are better at it, but most doctors don't report to it. So typically any report you see in VAERS is underreported by about a factor of about 41. And that's using the methodology approved by the CDC. And so when you look at VAERS, there are close to 10,000 deaths in the U.S. Of Americans. Now, there are over 20,000 worldwide, but there are about 10,000 domestic deaths. And if you subtract out the background deaths that would just normally happen otherwise, that may take out about 150, 200 deaths from that 10,000. And then you multiply by 41. And that leads you to a number of around 400,000 Americans that have been killed by the vaccine. And then you check your work 12 different ways. And that's what I did, is I went out to different individuals, calculated different ways using different data sets, not using VAERS at all. And every single method we used came out to 150,000 Americans that were killed by the vaccine. And that's to save about 10,000 lives. And the 10,000 lives is estimated based on Pfizer's own clinical trial. On their 6-month study, they reported it and it was published in a medical journal. And they showed that they would save just one life for every 22,000 people they fully vaccinated. So that means when you vaccinate 220 million people, you're going to save at most 10,000 lives. So we're killing 150,000 to 400,000 people to save fewer than 10,000 lives.
Steve, if pick any method, massive earthquake, tsunami, nuclear bomb, if 400,000 people died by any other one method, the media would be just relentlessly reporting around the clock. How can they avoid this and just continue to lie about it? How can they continue to cover this up with impunity?
Well, they don't want to talk to me or anyone else who looks at the data. They don't want to take a serious look at the various data. They don't want to take a serious look at any of the 12 other methods that we use to estimate it. And so anybody who says, well, he's wrong, they can't come up with a number. They all say, well, you're wrong, but I can't tell you how many people have died. So they just ignore it. They pretend like it doesn't happen. And they can get away with it because, see, people, when they get the vaccine, they don't die right after they get the vaccine. It can take less than 24 hours for you to die. You know, a lot of people will die in their sleep less than 24 hours later. And that just never gets reported. That just gets reported as, oh, he just died in his sleep. He was 22 years old and he just died in his sleep. And so they can bury this because sometimes you get bleeding in the brain. Sometimes it's cardiac arrest. Sometimes it's a cancer that went out of control. Sometimes it's multiple organ failure. And so because the causes are so varied, a pulmonary embolism, the causes of death are so varied and they don't happen immediately after the vaccine. So it's easy to say, oh, he just died from what? Oh, they died from a heart attack. Oh, can't blame it on the vaccine.
So are they just saying, well, we don't really have the concrete data, so we're not going to report it? Or are they intentionally participating in a cover-up for financial benefit?
Well, I don't want to ascribe motivations to people I don't know. I mean, what I do know is that when I tried to bring this to the attention of the CDC, they basically don't want to talk to me at all. They don't want to talk to any scientist who will dispute this. They don't want to advertise the fact that Dr. Peter Schirmacher, who's one of the top 100 pathologists in the entire world, he did a study and he looked at 40 people who had died within 2 weeks after getting the vaccine. And he's a pathologist. He looks at the autopsy of these people. He did the autopsy of these people, and he determined conclusively, without any doubt, that at least 30 to 40% of them died from the vaccine. And nobody can dispute that. This guy has impeccable credentials. And the mainstream press doesn't cover that at all. And there are other people in Germany, other pathologists, who have verified his work. And in fact, the most recent study was that 93% of the people who died after vaccination died because of the vaccine. Now, all of that stuff is covered up. You'll never see that in the US media anywhere. They don't want to talk to these people because it's too damaging. You'd bring down the mainstream media, you'd bring down the whole medical community, you'd bring down everybody in Congress, you'd bring down everybody at the CDC and the FDA and the NIH. I mean, this would be a massive takedown if, you know, they took this guy and he's in all of this research is, they can't dispute it. So they basically have to censor it and ignore it and not cover it and pretend like theirs is misreported and so forth. The VAERS data is very telling, and nobody at the FDA or CDC, none of them want to look at it, and none of them will debate any of the scientists that I work with. I work with about 30 scientists, and the CDC and the NIH and any of the outside committees, I even offered $1 million to any member of the outside CDC or FDA committee to come on video and debate us about what the data says, and nobody would take my $1 million. I said, it's $1 million. It's just for showing up, just for a few hours of conversation on a recorded video, and nobody would even show up for $1 million.
Can you imagine the guests that we could get on this show if I had $1 million to hand out for people to come here and debate me? I wish I had that kind of money. You know, it's no question, speaking of money, that, I mean, we've shown it on this program 100 times. Roll that tape. There's every single late night show, all these news broadcasts brought to you by Pfizer. This is the real reason why they don't really want to dig into this, because, I mean, look at this. There's just absolutely... I mean, the finance, I would imagine that up to 70% of their budget probably comes from the very people that are responsible for these death shots. What is the threshold for death? We know that 25 to 30 people died during the swine flu vaccine rollout. I think that was during the Obama years. We've got now anywhere from 150 to upwards of 400,000 people suspected dead from this thing. So what's the threshold?
Well, certainly in the 70s, it was like 35 people died, and they pulled the H1N1 vaccine after 35 deaths. We've got over 10,000 deaths in VAERS reported, and that's without the underreporting factor, you know. So we're at 400,000, we're probably at 400,000 deaths. And, you know, there's no stopping condition for this vaccine. There's never before, you would never have an IRB, so the Internal Review Board, ever approve an experiment where there's no stopping condition. But for these vaccines, there's no stopping condition. I've asked at the CDC and the FDA, and nobody can name what the stopping condition is, and nobody in Congress wants to talk about what the stopping condition for this vaccine should be. How many kids do we have to kill before you pull the plug? And we've asked members of Congress this question, and they don't want to answer the question.
So you see these viral exchanges between Tony Fauci, who we now have proof, thanks to Karen Kingston, is still actively funding gain of function research. And that's publicly available. It's right on the NIH database. I mean, he's hauling in and funneling millions of dollars into gain of function research still right now to this day, unimpeded by any of these viral exchanges in Congress, all the damning evidence. He lied before Congress. If you and I had committed the crimes that Fauci had committed, where would we be?
Oh, probably in jail. And, but, you know, Fauci is clearly the mastermind behind funding the virus. And for Congress to put him in charge of the response is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, and if Biden really wanted to know whether Fauci was involved in this, all Biden had to do was write a letter to the NIH and say, hey, can I have Tony's unredacted emails? And all Biden has to do is make those relevant emails public. But of course, he doesn't do that because he knows that Tony did it. And for Congress to turn a blind eye to this is crazy. There isn't, you know, other than Ron Johnson, there's not a single member of Congress that wants talk to me about this, because they're all embarrassed, because they all supported the vaccine.
And they still do. So many of them.
Yeah, they still do. It's crazy.
You know, Senator Ron Johnson, kudos to him, hats off. He's the only one willing to actually talk about the real adverse events to this. He's having panels in front of people, vaccine injured people. There's, you know, teens that have been injured by this thing that participated in the trial early on. And that's when this thing really should have been stopped. But isn't this like a real life human experiment that's ongoing right now? The lethal dose experimentation is happening right now in a human population because it didn't happen with animals.
Absolutely true. You know, people should ask, hey, how many people have elevated D dimers after the vaccine? We don't know. How many people have elevated troponin levels, which is an indicator of heart damage, after the vaccine? We don't know that either. How long does the spike protein last after you've been vaccinated in your body? Well, we don't know that. You know, so all of these experiments, all of these measurements, those all should have been done before you injected a human being with this vaccine. I mean, we don't even know what's in the vaccine itself. You know, there's somebody who may be going to jail because they tried to analyze what was in the vaccine. It's You're not allowed to do that. You're not even allowed to get a vial of the vaccine legally so you can look into what they're injecting in your body.
It goes even further than that. We've talked to people who have actually been killed. Their friends and their associates and their colleagues, these expert microscopy people, these scientists, these researchers have actually mysteriously been killed in a Clinton-esque type fashion, just disappeared from the entire world as a result of releasing their findings on what's inside of these vials, which I need not remind you, when you go to the pharmacist and you ask for the vaccine insert, they're left intentionally blank. Now, you go get a bottle of Advil, Steve, and you open that thing up and you open the insert, that thing folds out the size of a kite with all kinds of fine print. You need a microscope to look at this damn thing because of all the potential adverse side effects from just an Advil. And by definition, I mean, can we really even call these things a vaccine? Because by definition, don't vaccines provide immunity? I mean, we can ask Geraldo Rivera, we can ask Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez how the immunity thing worked out for them, no?
Well, you know, they changed the official definition of vaccine, you know, to fit. So, you know, It all depends on your definition, and somehow they're able to get Merriam-Webster to change the definition of a vaccine. But, you know, look, I don't deny that these vaccines do provide some immune response, but the problem is it's very short lasting. And the problem right now is that people are getting booster shots that may protect them for about 30 days or so, 30 to 60 days. There's a study in Denmark, it's really interesting, that you may get about 30 days of protection. But after that, what happens is that your immune system is now so destroyed by these vaccines that you're actually more vulnerable to get the virus after you've gotten the vaccine. So that's known as negative vaccine efficacy. And a lot of scientists that I talk to say, "Oh, what does that mean?" It means that when you give someone the vaccine, you're going to make them more likely to get infected rather than less likely. So at the very beginning, you have this honeymoon period for the first 30 days or so, where you do have some amount of protection, maybe, you know, 50% protection. But what happens is it quickly wanes and then it goes negative. And it means that the vaccine is actually on the side of the virus to help infect you. And this is troubling because the data is very clear on this. There's a Denmark study. If you go onto my Substack, you type in Denmark into the search box there, you'll find the Denmark study. It's quite revealing, and it shows that, hey, we're going to have to get these vaccines every 30 days to continue the protection, and it's not going to be very big protection. And think about getting injected every 30 days, and you can't get off the drugs. It's like being hooked on heroin. Once you're on the vaccine train, because your immune system gets weakened and weakened every time you get vaccinated, you can't get off.
Yeah.
If you got off, you get infected.
Vaccine is supposed to bolster and strengthen one's immunity to something, not go the other way. And Karen Kingston, again, this biotech analyst, is telling us that that's because this chimerically engineered, intentionally released bioweapon virus was actually intentionally designed to not respond to the vaccines and not respond to monoclonal antibodies and other treatments. It almost seems intentional. Do you agree that this is a bioweapon and an intentional attack on the global populace?
Well, you know, I've talked to Limeng Yan, and you know, she's the scientist that was in China, and she left, and she's in the United States now. She can speak freely, and she, and if you believe what she says, this was engineered as a bioweapon, but different people have different point of view. If you ask Tony Fauci, he would say, "Oh, we're just doing this as part of research, to just in case, and you know, let's develop vaccines against it so we can be prepared." Other people think it's a Chinese bioweapon that was supposed to be deployed against the U.S. So you know, it depends on who you believe. And all I'm saying is there are a lot of theories out there and different people have different points of view. I'm not going to take any one particular side on this. I think that, you know, unless you see the smoking gun evidence, it's really hard to make conclusions. But we do have people with some pretty credible theories that's, you know, backed up by the evidence that they've collected.
And actual real data. Look at Israel versus India. Look at what happens here. Look at your Substack. By the way, everybody should go and check it out. SteveKirsch.substack.com. I'm out of time. Will you come back again and talk to us soon?
No, absolutely.
Thanks so much for being here. Appreciate it.
Sure. My pleasure.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Cancel culture has not only affected myself and MyPillow, but also millions of you out there. My employees and I want to personally thank each and every one of you for all your support. At MyPillow, we have hundreds of products now, including my new slippers, bathrobes, sleepwear, and my new beds. We are offering the best products ever for the best prices ever. For example, we have the standard size MyPillows, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Or you can get custom fit with my premium queen size MyPillows, regularly $79.98, now just $29.98. Or my king size, regularly $89.98, now just $34.98. So go to MyPillow.com now and use the promo code on your screen or call the 1-800 number below to receive these exclusive offers. Thank you and God bless.
Get the most of Red Voice Media by going premium. Exclusive behind-the-scenes content, one-on-one extended hard-hitting interviews with Stu Peters, and deep-dive investigative reports. All always 100% ad-free when you become a premium member. Always 100% America first. True conservative values. Action-based reporting with courage. 100% ad-free content, including the headlines mainstream media won't touch. Uncensored. Unafraid. Unstoppable. RedVoiceMedia.com/premium. RedVoiceMedia.com/premium.
Well, biotech analyst Karen Kingston is back with even more findings stemming from the Project Veritas release earlier this week. And if you're Senator Rand Paul or any other senator, Ranjan, you should be watching this and taking notes. In his letter to the Inspector General, former DARPA fellow Major Joseph Murphy claimed that after DARPA rejected EcoHealth Alliance's proposal to do dangerous and illegal gain-of-function research on bat coronaviruses, EcoHealth went to Tony Fauci and got his agency directly at the NIH to fund the research instead. However, there's no documentation in the newly released documents for that claim until now. Karen Kingston did her own research, and she says that she's found direct evidence that starting in 2017, Dr. Fauci paid millions of dollars to EcoHealth Alliance for gain-of-function research, just as Murphy claimed. She also says that she's found evidence that Fauci collected more than $11 million in funding for research on the HIV virus. And she says that she found that even now, still to this day, Fauci is funneling millions of dollars to EcoHealth and other organizations to perform research on bat and other coronaviruses. And Karen Kingston joins us now. So you have receipts. You have proof that this is indeed happening.
I do, Stu. You had asked me before we went on air the other day if I had the receipts that Fauci was funding gain-of-function research. I said, no, they weren't in the documents. And then I thought to myself, well, I can just go to the NIH website and search the grant database and look for myself. And in fact, that I found that Fauci funded EcoHealth Alliance nearly $2 million between 2017 and 2019 to research the emergence of bat coronavirus pandemic threats. That's the name of the research.
If you're able to go to the NIH website directly and find this, why has nobody been talking about it until right now?
That's a great question. I've been asking this question because everything I share on the show comes from a government database. And so I've always been very confused as to why people haven't been ringing or, you know, sounding the alarm earlier. There was another payment between 2017 and 2019 to Ralph Lina, and he's on the team for the EcoHealth Alliance gain of function research for bat coronaviruses.
Okay, hold on a minute. You cut out there for a second. There was an internet issue. You cut out there for a second. You have information from what? Barrick what?
So in the DARPA documents, you'll find the team members' names, including Dr. Ralph Barrick, who is the godfather of coronavirus research at a University of North Carolina.
Yes.
Fauci paid him over $2.5 million between 2017 and 2019, specifically for gain-of-function research on bat coronaviruses. I'm going to show your viewers the receipts, but before we do that, I want to explain what gain-of-function is and how our government has been covering up the funding of this.
Yeah,
so
please.
If you go to the DARPA request for proposal called PREEMPT, and that is the Preventing Emerging Pathogenic Threats, you'll see on page 2 or page 1 right there there's that diagram. It's a cartoon. And you'll see the zoonic animals in the bottom. You'll see an ape, a duck, a pigeon, a bird, and a bat. Then you'll see the pig, and then you'll see the vector, which is a mosquito. So they're saying the way that a virus jumps from a bat to a human is that a mosquito would sting the bat, and then the mosquito would sting the pig, and then a military personnel would eat some Thai ribs and get infected. This is a fictional story. It's made up, just like making up that men can give birth to women. It is completely made up. The way that a coronavirus from a bat infects a human is in a lab. What they do is they take the backbone of a human virus, of a SARS-CoV virus, and they inject the bat coronavirus, which is what they did. If you go into the proposal even more, there's another cartoon from these global genocidal sociopaths. And it shows right there, they take the bat coronavirus, they select what they are calling quasi-species jumping, they do chimeric viruses, they create the chimeric virus, then they test it in mice who they put A2 receptors in, they make them humanized mice so that it binds to the mice's lungs. And then they use AI to actually create different sequences so they can inject these viruses or expose people to these viruses in our natural environment, or what they say is the bats. So it clearly explains it in the proposal too. So if you go to page 6 of the proposal, it says, we take chimeric recombinant bat coronaviruses, that's the SARS-CoV-2, insert it into human coronaviruses, and then we make sure it reconstructs the spike proteins that cause disease. Specifically, they mentioned the Wuhan 1 spike protein, which is in the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine. And then we make sure that the spike protein is shaped in a way that monoclonal antibodies won't bind to it and vaccines won't bind to it. So it can only cause disease. This is straight out of their proposal. And by the way, Ralph Baric, if you go through the history of NIH funding, there's millions and millions of dollars spent to him to modify receptor binding domains so that neutralizing antibodies that we produce don't bind to the viruses. And you can find that information too. So what's even more terrifying, because I want to take back what I said on your last show, is they give 3 delivery methods. One of the delivery methods is a gel, like an edible gel, I guess like a gummy bear for bats. Another one is a dermal patch or a liquid. And the last one is an aerosol that you could spray in the caves, but they also have monitoring systems. So as the bats go in and out of the caves, you can spray them. Or maybe you could spray humans as they go in and out of subways
in New York.
Yeah. Subway. Exactly.
Just for example, just a wild conspiracy theory example.
Yeah. So there's a lot of evidence in here that this was not a lab leak, that this was a bioweapon unleashed on the American people in specific hotspots. And that's what's in there, because even if you take a look at the 2016 publication from EcoHealth, specifically on this virus that they made, they said, you know, it's really not primed for epidemic or pandemic potential because the virus was unstable, right? And we always talked about that. They had to put it in that biosphere and then inject it in your body. That's how they really needed to get you on it.
So just hold on, just for clarification here, when you say the virus is unstable, you basically mean that it's weak. It won't live in the sun, and basically, I mean, a lot of things will kill this thing. It's weak, meaning that a lot of people won't die from the virus itself.
Yes, and the scientific term they use is it's attenuated. It's a weakened virus. It's just it's a lame virus, right? But if you put it into a biosphere that allows it to hijack your cells and override your innate immune system and then start replicating billions of spike proteins, which is the disease-causing part, well, then you've got a pandemic of epic proportions.
And
right?
The biosphere that you're talking about happens to be a syringe with the name Pfizer or Moderna or Johnson & Johnson or AstraZeneca on it, and then it would be introduced as a, quote, vaccine. That's what you're talking about, correct?
Yes, I am. It's a lipid nanoparticles.
The bioweapon is the injections, which were always the plan, not to combat COVID-19, but COVID-19 was rolled out to introduce the bioweapon and force everybody in fear to run towards it.
Exactly. And remember, Dr. Fauci announced in 2017 that Trump was going to face a viral pandemic
That's right.
of epic proportions, right? That he's not prepared for. Fauci, the majority of his salary comes from the DOD for biodefense. His job is to make sure there isn't a pandemic in America of epic proportion and one that's not a bioweapon. So why did he announce to the world in 2017 that he was going to epically fail at his one job that he's being paid the highest salary in the government to do? He's going to epically fail at it under the Trump administration. That was his announcement. He thought he was mocking Trump. He was telling the world that either he's an idiot or he's a criminal. So you guys decide.
Well, I think I already have the answer. Yeah, where's the proof? Let's see the receipts.
Let's go to the receipts. So in the document, there's biographies of the team members. That's where I found Dr. Peter Daznik's name, Ralph Barrick, and Xi Zhang Li, who's the bat lady. So we know she was part of it. So in the document itself, it says that USAID paid Daznik $130 million for this PREDICT project, which is to identify emerging infectious disease threats. And if you show the slide, they show the hotspots, and the biggest hotspot is China. And he used this $130 million to let the world know that the greatest threat is gonna be a bat coronavirus out of China, which he then created, Peter Daznak created. But if we go straight to the receipts, what you can find is the 2007-2019 payments. You'll see right there, there's three payments, all substantially hundreds of thousands of dollars that add up to $1.8 million for understanding the risk of bat coronavirus emergence. Senators can actually click on the description, and what they'll find is the description there actually matches almost verbatim the pitch in the EcoHealth's pitch to DARPA, the diffuse pitch. So they can just match it up. It's the same funding. Then you go on to Ralph Barrick, and I only searched 2017 to 2019 because I was looking for the time frame for this project.
Yeah.
You'll see there that there's mechanism of MERS cove entry and pathogenesis, so another SARS virus. And they paid him over $2.5 million, nearly 2.6. And it says, and it talks about cross-species transmission. So the way I found this is I used Barrick's name, and I actually put topic bat coronaviruses. Again, if you click on the descriptions, you'll see that this $2.5 million went towards bat coronavirus gain of function research. And then another person that was paid, keep in mind, was Dr. Fauci paid himself from 2004 through 2020, nearly $12 million to perfect the HIV envelope, which is found in the spike protein that's produced by these vaccines, by SARS-CoV-2. So I also have those payments there. He paid himself $12 million to add HIV to this spike protein. I also have the studies, which I've shown before, how the NIH funded studies in bat coronaviruses, where they found when they introduced HIV glycoprotein 120, they made the disease more infectious and more deadly. So you have those documents as well, I've shared before. I also want to say Fauci's still funding gain-of-function research. In 2021, he funded over $2 million to EcoHealth, to Daszak, again, for gain-of-function research. One of the studies here says, study of Nipah virus dynamics and genetics in bat reservoir and of human exposure to NIV, which is the Nipah virus, across Bangladesh and understanding patterns of outbreak. If you read that, the Nipah virus causes very extreme encephalitis, extreme swelling of your brain. It has a 70% mortality rate, and they're taking this virus and they're sticking it into human backbone viruses. This is gain of function research. They're taking animal viruses and making them spread to humans. Lastly, I want to talk about the payments that they made to, just last year, to Duke University, Barton Haynes. He got a payment for $17 million for design and development of a pan beta coronavirus vaccine. If you click on that description, what they're saying is there's going to be a coronavirus that comes out, and it's going to come from three or four or five different species, right? You're going to have to protect against bats and cattle. And I saw, pox from raccoons. So they're making a super vaccine to fight a super virus, but they have to make the super virus first. All of these grants, all of these research, they should all be shut down. They can only hurt and harm and kill American people and the global population. Congress needs to get on this and shut this down now.
Okay, I just hearing all this brings me back to a recent interview that Candace Owens conducted with President Donald Trump. And afterwards, she made excuses for Donald Trump and his becoming the number one commissioned salesperson for Pfizer, basically, is what it seems. And she said, President Trump is not an online guy. He doesn't really use the internet. She was lying. She was lying to her audience. She was not helping the country. She's not helping President Trump, if that's what she's trying to do by creating excuses for him. We have to remember, President Trump is the guy for his entire presidency, for 4 years or even more, going back into his candidacy, into the campaign, was on Twitter constantly all day long for 4 or 5 years, trolling Democrats and progressives and opponents. This guy is certainly, he knows how to use the internet. And if somebody doesn't know how to use the internet, they certainly don't know how to run the free world. But President Trump has to know. He has to know. And so what I'm asking you is, if you are able to, and I'm not undercutting your research here, you're tremendous at what you do, and you have been on the front lines here on this program, releasing some of the most pivotal information that is out there in the public purview right now. And so we thank you for that. So I'm not trying to undercut you or sell you short. But you found this in a publicly accessible government website database. People don't want to read this stuff. They think that it's boring. So they don't go perusing through NIH websites and documents and reading thousands upon thousands of words every day like you do. So thank you for doing that to save us the pain of having to. But is there, I mean, any possibility that Senator Rand Paul or Senator Ron Johnson or Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene or any of these people don't have the same information? Why aren't they saying something about this? This is the proof right here that we've been waiting for, and it's been right out in the wide open all along. And I'm asking you to speculate, but what are the chances that they just really, truly don't know that this is here?
That's a great question. As far as whether or not they know how to find the NIH grants, I don't know if they can or they cannot. But going back to when the vaccine was unleashed, I don't know.
If they can't, they need to be fired and replaced with somebody who knows how to do their job. And they have a full staff of people. These senators and congressmen don't just run around solo dolo. They have an entourage of people that work for them in their office. Some of them hundreds of people that work for them in their office. This is their job. This is what we pay for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've been hired by large pharma companies after they paid McKinsey $5 million to provide them with a marketing plan that was based on no facts and law. And I was like, if you move forward with this, you're going to be fined about $500 million or $500 million from the FDA. And these are the top people in the industry. So I'm not sure. I can't answer that question. To me, this seems pretty easy to find. It seems pretty easy to find the right experts to be able to do this. If you know how to apply for an NIH grant, you know how to search the database. At least you should. So, I can't answer that question,
With the proof that you bring here, it just makes more questions as to how this government is working and who really they're working on behalf of. And so we have a lot of questions for a lot of people.
I agree, and I think pharmaceutical companies hired me when they're in a hot spot and they're between a rock and a hard place. So like, call Karen, she can find the information. So I mean, if there isn't people in the government that can find this information, people know who I am. They know how to contact me. So that's another question, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it opens up a lot of questions for me. We've invited, by the way, we're in communication with Senator Rand Paul's office to have him here on the program. And also the invitation is open for President Donald Trump and for Senator Ron Johnson. These are the people that really have the megaphone right now. And a lot of people, I think the questions are just, they continue to pile up, but this answers a lot of them. I mean, this is the proof right here. There should be no more questions. This proves criminal conspiracy 100%. Millions of people over the years have died as a result of Anthony Fauci's actions and the research that he's funded, which means the bioweapons lab that he's funded, knowing that they were going to intentionally release death upon the world, specifically Americans. Peter Daszak's own words talk about creating a media hype so that investors will then get on board. The criminal's own words and the proof right here. What else do we need for criminal referrals on these people? Nothing. Now what we need is action from the people that we supposedly elected to go represent the American people. Karen Kingston, for your hard work and for your dedication to the truth. Thank you very much. We appreciate you being here.
Branch Covidians have turned our cities into super shedder capitals. The jabbed have become self-spreading bioweapons, threatening the purebloods.
I was incapacitated. I was literally laying down the entire day with a terrible migraine. I actually passed clots, which obviously is insanely alarming.
Clots?
Yes.
The clot shot is ending careers, detonating bombs in the brains of pilots.
Dozens, maybe north of 100 commercial airline pilots have died within just a few days of being vaccinated. Dead.
But don't despair. There's an answer to protect you and your kids from the chimerically engineered symptoms. Forget the forever boosters. Fortify your immune system today with the Z-Stack from Dr. Zev Zelenko. One pill formula taken twice a day. Everything you need to fight back against bioweapons, RSV, and influenza B. ZStackProtocol.com. Stock up now. Be prepared. Stand ready. ZStackProtocol.com.
What happens when you only have 1 hour? We are out of time, but have a great weekend. We will see you tomorrow at redvoicemedia.com/premium. And please keep the quiners in your prayers. We'll update you on Scott's situation as well. God bless you.